Good evening, this is Carl James with Talking Hoosier Baseball on Thursday, May 6, 2010. Yesterday, Coach Mercer took questions from the media regarding Indiana's upcoming trip to Piscataway, New Jersey to play Rutgers and Nebraska. Indiana does sit at the top of the Big Ten standings, but only by a half a game. There are six teams in the hunt for the title. This is a big opportunity for the Hoosiers. The coach discusses both pitching, hitting, and the general status of the team as they begin this very tough stretch.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody being here today. And it was an exciting weekend. I thought we played pretty well for the most part, and certainly a big weekend coming up. So it'll be good to get on the road and go play against those good teams and compete a little bit. So looking forward to it. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll start off with Tom, and then we'll go to Carl.
Jeff, I know you don't normally talk about starters and who goes when, whatever, on Wednesdays, but in a weekend like this where you have two different opponents, do you look more closely at who might be best against whom, whether it's Rutgers or Nebraska, and use that as part of your determinations? Or, you know, obviously Saturday you play them each anyway, but does how much does all of that factor in regards to advanced scouting and such like that?
The Saturday games, it certainly does. Actually, I literally just walked out of Coach Parker's office 10 minutes ago talking about just that. I think we're going to be I think that third game, we're still at a TBD kind of situation, but we did talk about that quite a bit. The matchups on Saturday, what we felt like was going to be kind of the best matchup, I think. At this point, I think we'll probably stay with McCade in game two, but that's kind of still up for debate a little bit on Saturday. McCade will throw on Saturday, whether it's in game two or game three, and then what we're going to do in game three is a little bit up for debate as far as what we feel like is a better matchup between, you know, obviously McCade, John Madunio, Ty Bothwell, kind of those couple of guys in that position. So you're right. We are still kind of actively talking about that, pursuing that, looking at guys' bullpens a little bit this week and just making sure we have the matchups that we want going into it to protect the pen as much as you can and not expose guys in situations that aren't as good matchups. And offensively, they're a little bit different clubs. So, you know, which one, you know, Ty's a really good matchup for certain guys, and John's a good matchup for certain guys, and they're not necessarily the best matchup for others. So we are still in the middle of that conversation, but it does take a big part of that process.
Carl, then John.
Coach, you're likely getting a second look at Rutgers pitcher Harry Ratowski after he held your team to one run in six innings on opening day. Mm-hmm. How confident are you in getting a better result this time?
Yeah, I think we match up better now. You know, obviously after a body of work, I think we're in a more confident position. The lineup has changed, you know, quite a bit in that period of time. And having seen other left-handed pitchers, you know, if you look at our offense, we didn't see Tommy didn't throw this past fall. And so we don't have a ton of left-handed pitching. We have a couple, but the guys that we do have are mostly bullpen guys. So When you look at having had a chance to see several, obviously we saw two left-handed pitchers this past weekend, and that stuff helps a ton. And so I do feel like we're more prepared for that, having seen guys. We have a couple different guys in the lineup that we had before that handle that a little bit better. So I do feel better about it. He's very good and has done a good job, and it'll be certainly a competitive game for us, but I do feel like we're a better team. And I think my opinion says that, but also statistically speaking, we're a better offense than we were, you know, at that point in time. So I do feel good about it, but you still have to go out and do it. You can go out and play better and not get a tremendously better outcome. You know, you can hit five line drives and it's like, well, that we played a lot better this time. Good job. We still had two runs. So you got to go out and put runs on the board, but no, I do feel better. It's a great question.
John and then Austin.
I know you guys look at the hitting mechanics a lot and break that down with Cole Barr, you know, not being that big of a guy. How does he generate so much power to be able to hit the ball as hard as he does? I mean, what is it about Cole Barr, his swing and just his makeup that allows him to do that?
He's an extremely twitchy kid. Like he's a his body makeup. You see some guys that run well because they're light. Some guys are really mobile. Some guys are just powerful. And he's just a really dense, powerful athlete. That, you know, I think his vertical jump, I'm going to say something wrong, but I want to say it was like close to 40 inches, something ridiculous. You know, he's like a 6'5 runner. He throws about 95 miles an hour. I mean, he is just a really dense athletic kid. So he has some genetic predisposition to be able to really have a ton of burst and do those things. The thing for him that's allowed him to hit with the bat speed that he does and create so much force is he's so dense and so has such burst, but he's still mobile. And so if you look at like the stretch during like his, he can have different body parts. So his lower half can be unwinding as his upper half is still winding. And then he has that uncoiling effect instantaneously. And then he creates a ton of bat speed and on plane. And when he's right, he's on plane. And then it's a really scary guy. I mean, you look at his average exit velocity 2 years ago, I think it was either 89 or 90 miles an hour. I want to say overall, his average exit velocity was like 89 or 90 miles an hour. And then last year in the shortened season, I think it was 79 miles an hour, right? His hands were in a much steeper location. And so that his twitchiness and athleticism and that burst was kind of negated because he didn't have the ability to have the separation of his upper half and his lower half. And so the bat never accelerated the way that it could. I don't know what it is now, but I'm guessing it's a heck of a lot closer to 90 than 79 as he's made adjustments. If you look at where his hands start in a more neutral location in front of his body, that allows him to then work up and back as the lower half's working forward. So one, genetically, he's very gifted. He works really, really hard at his body, maintaining his mobility. He's incredibly strong. I mean, you should see him. Like, he's got all of his Tupperware lined up in the dugout during practice, where he's got all of his meals prepped, and he's in the dugout eating between rotations. And I mean, he's just a really meticulous kid that has really worked hard on his body. And then he's been able to make a few adjustments to the mechanic of his swing to make it more playable. But he's certainly a terrific player, but you're right. You just don't see that body type create that kind of force very often. Normally it's a lot bigger and longer limbs to create it, which is what makes him such a dynamic third baseman too. It's the same thing that allows him to move like that offensively. The same thing that allows him to be such a force downhill. I have never seen a kid be able to make some of the plays that he makes on slow rollers, on bunts, the one-handed plays coming downhill. I mean, sometimes he tries to bait guys into bunting, and it's like, no, just come in. Just take it away and don't even let them a bunt. But I think they all go hand in hand. Yeah, he's special.
Austin and then Aaron?
I'll follow up on Cole. It felt like in 2019 he was kind of a home run strikeout guy. What about his game changed in the past year or two to where now he's leading the team in batting average, he's leading the team in RBI, he's leading the team in walks. He's a great third baseman, like you said. What changed for Cole?
Well, I think an understanding of the whole game. When he didn't play much as a freshman, had hamstring issue, and that was a really talented team. And so what he valued in a lot of ways was the ability to hit the ball, you know, a long way and out of the ballpark. And did a good job at that. And as he's grown, as we all do, as we all mature, and our eyes are open to the totality of the game, and you see there's a lot more that goes into this. Just because I can hit a ball out of the ballpark doesn't mean that I'm relegated to only doing that. Like, I have to be able to become a complete player. The conversations for him, look, with a lot of these guys, they want to win. We want to win now. He wants to be a great player at Indiana, and he's here. But at some point, he would like to be a professional player that has a chance to play for a significant period of time. And to be able to do that, you have to bring more to the table. You have to be more than a one-dimensional guy. And so he's been on a personal mission since the end of that year to become a more complete, well-rounded player. And you can see it taking shape where my point always to the guys is, if you went on a mission to try to hit 400, what would it look like? If extra base hits, if slugging, if all that stuff didn't matter, if it wasn't a part of the conversation, what would your at-bats look like And how would you attack the ball if you were just trying to hit purely 400 and then try to do that? And what you end up finding is the more balls that you put on the barrel, the less that you chase, the less that you overswing, the more balls you put on the barrel. In actuality, the more power you end up hitting for, just because you're going to be on the barrel. When you're strong, when you're on the barrel, you have a chance to hit the ball for extra base hits. So I think just his the maturity of the game for him, wanting to become more of a complete all-around player, wanting to obviously impact the team in a positive way all around, because he does have the physical tools to do that in every aspect, base running included, but also to prepare himself hopefully for a professional career, that he's able to go out and be an impact player in a variety of different ways. And he's done that. He's accomplished exactly what his goals, what he set out for at the end of his sophomore year. And it's been a pretty awesome thing to watch. You just don't watch many guys know what they have to improve, set a plan, and then attack it every day like a pro, and then get to see the outcome in real time. Normally, by the time a player goes through that transformation, they're already out the door and they're gone, whether they're graduated or they're drafted. But you don't really get to see the whole journey like you've got to see with Cole. And so it's been fun, and I'm really happy for him.
Aaron and then Tom. Coach, you've had some issues with lefties earlier in the year. You've got to face a bunch more this weekend. How much did it help you finally got to Wallace and Bauman last weekend, or to the best? It's not going to get any easier this weekend with Rutowski and Wareski and probably Povich for Nebraska. So how much does it help your confidence that you finally got to some good lefties this weekend when you most likely are going to have to face three more again this weekend?
Yeah, I think the best indicator of future success is the past, right? Have we done it in the past before? And for us going into this weekend, it gives you a lot of confidence knowing that we just were able to be really competitive against a couple of really good lefties this past weekend. And I think, again, you go back to some of the technology pieces, the more and more you're able to expose yourself to those. The spin ball machine, we had the guys in there banging off that thing yesterday and getting more and more comfortable off that. Off of a left-handed pitching profile, the wind reality stuff. I think all those things help lead to success, and obviously then you see it in real time. And going into it this weekend, it's going to be important. But it's going to be important down the stretch that we're able to compete against good arms, regardless of right-handed or left-handed or bullpen arms, or you know, if there's a righty out there that's 92 to 95 with the wipeout slider, that's going to be a battle. And same thing with the lefties that are coming up. Good is good, and we're going to have to go out and be tough against those guys. I think the big thing that guys learn over the course of a season is the ability to manage an at-bat and the ability to manage a bat with two strikes. If you look at what we've done against left-handed pitching, a lot of it's been created on putting the ball in play with two strikes, not necessarily in the firmest of fashions either, but putting the ball in play with two strikes and then being really tough with two outs, not allowing the inning to just die because there's two outs. And you're able to really push guys. Sometimes pitchers, not their confidence, their focus can shift a little bit. You see a two-out walk or a two-out double, and all of a sudden, before you know it, the two-out double turns into a two-out run, and one run turns into two, and you can push guys. You can't give away any at-bats with two strikes. You can't give away any outs. And when you do that, you stack them up, you really force guys to work. And that's what we did, and we'll have to do that this weekend because those arms are going to be good. You're exactly right.
Jeff, two quick questions for you. One, with the next two weekends out of three, you've got four-game weekends, so all hands on deck is preferred, obviously. Where are you with Connor Maness? Is he getting close to coming back?
Yes, he is. He is getting close to coming back. He's traveling this weekend, and we're kind of still in that in-between with him, but he threw a bullpen this week. I think he felt good. He is getting close to coming back, so hopefully we'll have him, whether it's this weekend or next, but hopefully in the next 2 weeks we'll have him back. He's on his way to recovery.
Great. And secondly, on Sunday when you were talking about Gabe, you sort of mentioned that you never worry about the person that's going out there, but the stuff may vary. Is it sort of the same with Tommy in the approach that he takes to pitching a game? He's such a cerebral guy and such. I mean, is that comment sort of comparable to him as well?
Yeah, I agree. I think you're exactly right. Mechanically, guys can get sideways a little bit. Tommy's, when he gets a little bit off kilter, he can get off, or Gabe or somebody. But emotionally, you don't worry about the game speeding up on those guys. You got to think, or you do believe with those guys that they're going to have the ability to take a deep breath, to step off, to have a meeting with Justin or a meeting with the catcher and get back into where it doesn't snowball into becoming something bigger than it really needs to be, where, you know, one walk, maybe one or two walks doesn't lead to three or four, and all of a sudden the outing's over. I mean, you look at, I was watching from home, but Tommy's outing against Purdue, I think in the first inning, he walked the bases loaded and maybe gave up a run and then struck out the side or got out of the jam. And that very easily could have become a 5 or 6 run inning, and the game's really an uphill climb after that happens. And so you look at Tommy, you look at Gabe, you look at a couple of those guys that are stable enough to have a struggle to walk a guy, to give up a few hits and then be able to get back in there. Yeah, that is a really nice thing with Tommy, is he's mature. He's an adult. If the mechanics get a little bit off or he gets a little bit off kilter, you trust the fact that he can get it back right, or and or his emotions are not going to snowball and make it worse.
All right, let's do three more here. We got Carl, Griffin, and then John.
Coach, did your program put in a bid to host a regional?
I don't believe that we did. I think that when that time frame was passed or was asked for, it was coming off the Ohio State weekend, and then on top of that, with some of the Big Ten regulations with the fans in attendance and whatnot, I don't believe that we did, based on a couple of those different things. And if you asked me at that time, if the NCAA is required, my understanding at that time, and I can be wrong, I could be wrong, been wrong before, but my understanding is they asked and there was a deadline for that. And we're coming off of, I believe, the Ohio State weekend, where if I'm Indiana, I'm not looking at that team and saying you've lost 5 games in a row, that this is a team that's going to host. And on top of that, with some of the fan attendance and whatnot that the Big Ten was doing at that point, I did understand it. I did understand it with it being kind of an awkward year and an awkward time frame to put in your bid to host, in essence.
All right, Griffin and then John.
Coach O, we've talked about how successful you guys have been at home, especially hitting. On the road, you guys have struggled a lot more hitting. Is there anything specifically that you're focusing in going on the road and making sure that you guys hit as well as you have the last 2 weekends at home?
That's a great question. I think the access to the facility at home probably helps a little bit with those things, where you're able to get some few extra swings. If you want to come in 2 or 3 hours early and hit before you take BP, guys can come in early. If you want to stay late, you can stay late. You just have access to more stuff. When you're on the road, you got 40 minutes and maybe the cages and maybe not. And some of the places that we've gone to, we haven't had, some of the weather can be an impact on some of those things. And so, I think there's a multiple different moving pieces to it, but hopefully this weekend the weather won't be an issue, and we'll be in a good enough place where we won't need the extra swings and be able to go out and produce like we do offensively. I think a lot of those things are probably just like a comfort factor to get extra swings. But once you start to play well, my dad tells stories about when he coached at Indiana, they had the little golf wiffle balls. We still hit those a ton. But they didn't have BP a couple of days, and so they'd go out in the parking lot or the field next, or like the open lot next to the field, and go hit wiffle golf balls, and they scored runs and hit just fine. He always reminds me they led the league in hitting, so he never lets me forget that. And he said, we hit wiffle golf balls. If we can do that, you guys can figure out how to use hitting just the cages. So we always bring our wiffle golf balls just as a kind of an homage to the old timers, but. No, we have to make sure that we're prepared. And I think when we're confident, we go out and play well, whether you're at home or on the road.
All right, last one for John.
Just a question on a different track. The one-time waiver was approved by the NCAA. I guess the idea is that baseball impact would be a little more minimal, because I think a lot of kids usually get a waiver. There's not so it's a little different. But, I mean, do you think there's any effects that you see from it in terms of any changes in the way you guys recruit, or in terms of the worries about guys looking to go elsewhere, getting out quicker? Do you see any changes coming from it for baseball?
Yeah, I think it's going to change the landscape of the game in a fundamental way. And I don't know what side of the fence I'm necessarily on, because I've been on both sides of the fence, where You know, I've been at a really strong mid-major program where your whole thing is based on player development, and you're going to see a lot of guys that decide to transfer, and that's going to be a part of the game. So that part would be very frustrating for me, and I understand that part of it. I also understand the way that college baseball operates in a lot of ways, especially right now with the rosters where they are, with the COVID situation and rosters being so full. You know, some programs decide to have more players on their roster than others, and there are some guys that get buried in there, and I do understand that. I mean, I transferred. I was in the last class that was allowed to transfer without sitting out before they put in the new rule, and it was of great benefit for me. I wasn't in a place that was a great fit for me, and I transferred and had a terrific experience. So I can see both sides of it, but I do think it will change the way that people recruit. I think it changes the way that you're able to be a little bit more patient in the recruiting process. We try to be patient in general, and this allows you to continue to do that. And for some folks, they won't. Some folks will just full steam ahead, knowing that guys can leave after a year, and if they have, you know, if their numbers are inflated, then they can get out from underneath it rather quickly, even quicker now than they could have before. So I do think it will allow some folks to be more patient, to make sure that the fit is right, knowing that there is a market of immediate available players that can come in and impact your program. And I also think it's going to force coaches to show up every day and run the program the way that if it was their son, that they would want their program to be run, because players are going to have a little bit more latitude now than they've ever had before. And I don't mean that in an accusatory way at all. It's just sometimes I think when players can't leave and there's no other real option, they don't have as much power in the process. And I think for the most part, 90% of players are happy and they're enjoying their experience across the board. But I mean, you have to make sure if you say, like, this is what we're about when you recruit a guy, we're about player development, we're about camaraderie, about relationships, we're about all these things, and you show up and it's not about those things, kids now have an opportunity to make their own decision. And so I think for the player, it makes a lot of sense. I went through it as a player, like I said, and that was my thing. We're like, this isn't what I signed up for, even though I was a starter. And so I transferred. And I mean that respectfully. And it was probably the best for everybody involved in that situation. But it will change the landscape tremendously in baseball. You look at just how big the rosters are. And there's just not a, you know, in football, you have a defensive line and they rotate the defensive line through. So you may run out six or eight defensive linemen. In baseball, there's one first baseman and he's going to play almost assuredly the whole game. Or there's one shortstop. He's going to play almost assuredly the whole game and every game. So it's just, there's not as much movement in baseball as there is other sports. You can have eight or 10 guys can play, you know, in basketball, they can run in and out. Doesn't happen like that in baseball. So it's a discussion. It's a hot topic every day in the office. I can promise you that, as you could tell how scattered I am on it. There's a million different pieces, but it will impact baseball tremendously, tremendously.
We've got one last quick follow-up from Tom.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, because one of the conversations I had with another coach about that is what he fears the most is that you will always have to sort of re-recruit your freshmen every year. You know, whereas you might want with a freshman to give them time to settle in, you may not have the luxury or that option anymore. Is that one of the biggest concerns for you is what happens to those one-year guys in that first year in a program?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's a concern. I can see both sides of it, where in the past I've always been a proponent of the red shirt, and it's not for me. It's like, I always tell players, this isn't for me. For us, the best thing for us to do is if we need you to have 10 at bats, that's what helps us win the conference. Then that's the best thing for us. Or one pinch run. If you score from second base on a pinch run that wins a game and we win the conference, that was your one, you know, outing, and that helped us win. That was worth it for us, but not for you. So we try to explain that to a young guy coming in, like, hey, I think the best thing for your career is for you to redshirt. You have 4 years left. You have double draft leverage, all these really good things. But all a kid a lot of times sees is, I don't get to play this year. And now that's a really frustrating experience for a guy. And so it makes it more difficult. So you're right where it's good to struggle. You have to have hardship. You have to have struggle. You have to have adversity. You have to fail. It's a requirement. It's not my rule. It's just it's the way of the world. It's biological. It's how we advance ourselves. We have to struggle. And that's not fun. And so when a guy struggles as a freshman, like almost all freshmen do, and doesn't play as much as he would like, to your point, Tom, is that guy now, am I trying to re-recruit that guy to help him to stay, to help the program, knowing that this is just the normal path of life that he's struggled with? And it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. But the other side of my brain says there are some freshmen that aren't going to play, and they're never going to have a significant impact. And so they probably do need to find somewhere else to play. I'm not talking about at Indiana. I'm talking about across the board, just in college athletics. There are some freshmen that come in and are not good enough. And so they have the opportunity. I always tell our guys this: nobody plays Major League Baseball. Nobody plays Major League Baseball until they do. Like the very, very small fraction of guys. You think about all the guys in the history of Indiana University that played baseball that are playing Major League Baseball. It's just a tiny fraction. So this is your whole career of baseball. And when you're done with this, it's something that you've worked your whole life to be able to experience and do. And one day they turn the faucet off and it's over. And you have to have, you live the rest of your life on the memories that you've created, the relationships you've created during this experience. For 98% of these guys, this is it. And so I do understand the desire to want to make every memory and build every relationship and have every experience that you can. Because for baseball, there's the scholarship money stinks. Let's be honest. There's no scholarship money. They don't, it's like the these guys are walking out. I walked out of college with tens of thousands of dollars in debt. And a lot of these kids are going to walk out of college with $100,000+ in debt. So they're paying for this experience. The scholarship money stinks. I'm supposed to have $100,000 or $200,000 in debt when I leave college to not play and not travel and not have an experience that I've spent my entire life trying to work towards. So again, I know I'm playing both sides of it a little bit here, but I do think that every player has the right to sit down with his coaches and his family and have an honest discussion, where we always go back to relationships are so important. You got to have a relationship and a trusting relationship to be able to sit down with a family or a kid and say, listen, I know it was tough this year, but you're in the plans, you're in the future. You just got to keep going. And I know it's hard, but we have great confidence in you. And at the same time, sit down with the kid and say that I don't know where the opportunity is. And if you want to pursue other opportunities, I'm going to support it and I'm going to understand it and be able to have a relationship that they trust what you have to say. And try to, either work together on good terms or separate on good terms, knowing that ultimately we're just trying to do the best that we can for you, for your career, knowing that Major League Baseball is such a finite opportunity for so few people that we need to maximize the opportunities in college baseball that we have, especially when we're paying, like we're just paying out the yin yang for this experience. It should be as good as it can be.